What's up? This is Tuck with Alprina. You know, she's not feeling well today, so everybody sends some well wishes out to her. But I'd like to thank everybody for checking out Borden DE. If you haven't already, check out the site, www.bordende.com. Be sure to get on the mailing list to be notified when we do updates and everything like that. And yes, we are actually starting to hold openings. So if you have something that you do and you're from Delaware, you want to come up here and share it with us, definitely, you know, hit us up on the contact page and everything like that. But I would like to welcome everybody to episode 5. Yes, we're 5 episodes in. And this one here, I have the privilege and honor of sitting with 3 gorgeous women. 3 gorgeous. I mean, one of them so gorgeous, she went to the bathroom to, you know, get her hair right and everything. The other 2 came in and they were ready to go, but one of them, she was like, hold on, I need to use the bathroom. And she came back, you know, straight star studded. So if she's in a production of yours, you probably know that, you know, yeah. Mr. DeVille, we got to get her in the chair for the makeup and everything first before she shows up. And
yes, Pam is special.
Yes. But tonight's episode 5, is we're going to be discussing black women in theater. Not necessarily local theater, but this is a local show, so we're going to talk about that. But by no means are none of these 3 ladies just local performers. They travel and they do everything. And, you know, my buddy Ivy, drinking partner, harassment mate and everything like that, she wears so many hats in theater, like, we could run an episode by herself.
True.
And everything, but, you know, she says she's going to backpedal a little bit and, you know, share the limelight, like, because, you know, Pam's definitely a heavy worker as well.
Yes.
And Shama. I'm sorry, I will butcher a name. I should have did my little thing like that. But, yeah, she's a new friend. She's the newest friend, but, you know, still got love for her and everything, and she's very busy and everything, so I am going to get the camera off my ugly mug and put it on them and everything. So there we go. We got Ivy, we got Pam in the middle, and
Shama.
Hi. Yeah, I don't want to say Shama.
Yes, Shama.
I have to stop butchering people's names. So how y'all ladies doing tonight?
Good.
And I appreciate you girls coming through for Borden D on a cold Sunday night.
Oh, it's a beautiful
Sunday night.
Oh,
it's absolutely beautiful.
It's still 50 degrees outside. It's raining. Oh, okay.
I love the rain.
Me too. I love her rain.
I love the rain.
Well, I know if you say it's cool, because me and you, we know cold elements.
Exactly.
Because, you know, me and Ivy, you know, we're always out. So, and if Pam says it's good, then because Pam will be the first one to tell you, like, no, it's cold. You know, it's cold. And everything. So, Ivy, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
We know that you're definitely an avid supporter of the arts.
I am.
But I want you to take a moment and just dig deep into the things that you have done, not just locally, but everywhere else is in the arts and everything. Because, like, I'm looking at your bio here, and I see that you were on the board of directors of several arts organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Wilmington Children's Chorus.
Yes.
Christiana Culture Arts Center.
Yes.
And Delaware All-State Theater.
Yes.
And everything. Now, I see that you were a co-director for Fringe Wilmington.
I was, yeah.
What was Fringe Wilmington? Because I'm not familiar with that.
So Fringe Wilmington was an organization that was started by Tina Betts and Rick Newman when they were still working for the mayor's office of cultural affairs, mm-hmm. and for Mayor Jim Baker. When they went out of office and Mayor Williams came in, Jenny Barton and I took that over. It was really, really led by Jenny, and she just gave me the privilege and the opportunity to be her co-director. And so we had to keep that Fringe Wilmington going. And it basically was an opportunity for unusual art, and I put that in quotes, but it's unusual art for it to happen in and around Wilmington. So we did like things like unusual films or in a 24-hour filmmaking contest, mm-hmm. Just unusual art. Like one of the things that that Fringe Wilmington has been known for is like the Ass Chronicles, which is about, you know.
The Ass Chronicles?
Yes, and I know you love that, Tuck.
we can speak on
that. Oh, yes, we can. And it's just that. It's about, you know, it was a show which featured several black women talking about what it's like to have ample asses.
So you was a star of the show?
Of course not.
I'm sorry, folks. That's an inside running joke with me and Ivy.
It's true.
Because I met Ivy's booty before I met her.
That's true. It walks into, it has its own fan club. Yeah, it walks into the room,
But But don't get it twisted. We're still friends. The booty, not so much, but me and Ivy as a whole are friends and everything. So,
but yeah. More than that, the French Wilmington was an opportunity for artists to be able to share their original works in a way that was sometimes unusual for some people. But just, you know, they might not always get an opportunity. They're not being featured at the Grand or the Playhouse or, you know, these mainstream arts institutions. So we were able just to give artists an opportunity to showcase their works. So French Wilmington.
Okay, yeah. And you did the things I never told my mom. I remember when you were soliciting information
stories,
for that,
yes.
The stories and everything.
So that was presented just this past year in the Philly Fringe, mm-hmm. And actually we were really successful, and it was really a wonderful opportunity. We got over 50 submissions to anonymously, because of course mm-hmm. Some people submitted stories that were heartbreaking and wonderful and, you know, mean and just the gamut of emotions. So we got over 50 stories from both men and women, mm-hmm. And I need to make that clear, because even though we were women that presented it, it was stories that came from us from all walks of life, from both men and women, and we presented them in a way that you couldn't. We wanted to make sure that we were truthful to the story that were shared with us, but at the same time, we didn't want, like, if you brought your mother, we didn't want them to be like, oh, you know.
Oh, she's talking about this is our
this
story.
Me. Right. Okay. So we did it in a way that was just. That just protected the person who shared the story.
Okay.
And it was life-changing for me. I have to admit, like, I submitted my own story anonymously, so I was one of the 50 that submitted a story. But for me, as a supporter of the arts, it made me realize that this is the kind of art that I want to continue to support. And it was just a wonderful experience. And so we're working on a new project called mm-hmm. Coincidence for next year's Philly Fringe.
Okay. Wow, I see that there. Now, last thing before I, you know, because I don't want the other two to think that it's just me and you and everything like that.
Yeah, because, you know, we're cool.
I had the honor of sitting on backstage when you were doing Starcatcher, because I had no idea what Starcatcher was, and Ivy put me to work. I thought I was going to sit there and chilling. Ivy's like, no, I need you to go to PA and get this guy and bring him back, and while you're there, I need you to film the fall and send me the video. So, yeah, so she got on me about that and everything. But I thought that was decent because, like I said, you were the one that opened my eyes to the arts here. Because, like I was sharing earlier, that my ignorance compared what you ladies do to stage plays. And that kind of turned me off. And you were like, no, there's an absolute difference. Mm-hmm. And when you shared that with me, I'm like, oh, okay. And then seeing Starcatcher behind the scenes was like, wow, these cats really go all out, because the gentleman I went to pick up, he was like their stunt coordinator and stuff like that. And the car ride with him alone was worth the price of admission, because he shared with me about how he was a stunt person and how he did this and this, but now he's disabled and retired, so... You know,
so one of the things, just really fast, if I could just say this really quickly, mm-hmm. is that as I was coming here tonight and I was getting dressed and I was, you know, doing my makeup and I was thinking about, like, what this interview would be about tonight, one of the things that I want to say, especially since we're talking about Black people in theater, mm-hmm. is that, you know, a lot of us, we have one idea about what we think theater is. Mm-hmm. And I think as Black people, sometimes we think it belongs to them, you know, so we don't train our young people to be in theater until we become an adult, and then we realize that there's this whole world that's open to us. Mm-hmm. But many times we don't have the training necessary to be in theater once we reach adult age. So my message would be to many people of color is that it's not just for them. Theater is for everyone. It's about the artist and it's about mm-hmm. the work. It's not just for white people. It's for all of us. And it's the stories that we tell, so many of us can identify with those stories. Peter and the Starcatcher is not a Black story. It's not a white story. It's just a story. And so many of us can identify with that story. Same thing with Things I Never Told My Mother. Those were stories that we told about our relationships with our mother. They're not white stories. They're not Black stories. They're not Latino stories. They're just stories about our relationships with our mother. And we can all take something from that. So tonight, I would hope that when we talk about being Black women in the theater, that I hope that we can also agree that the theater is for everyone. And right. I think we all need to sort of, like, get out of that mindset that, like, the theater versus stage plays versus this versus that.
Because you definitely helped me with that, because when you was like, fool, you live down the street.
Right.
How could you not be here? I'm like, I don't do stage plays. And your whole expression changed when I said to you, like,
everyone's
stage plays.
Everyone's expressions changed when you say that stuff. Like,
I was like, oh, man, nah,
like
Ivy, I can't.
Exactly.
It's very offensive.
I'm sitting there, I'm like, I can't beat Ivy, man. Please let her know this is a mistake. Please let her know this is a total mistake. Now, Pam, you know, when I first met you, I think it was it at the studio or... I can't remember exactly how I met you, but I had first came, I thought you were just a singer. It wasn't until we started corresponding that it was like, oh, damn, you're an actress too. I didn't know that.
Well, that's how I got into acting, though. So,
through singing.
Yes, because I just knew a few years ago that I wanted to sing, but I just didn't know how. So I literally just, I just tried out for a musical one day, and ever since then I just...
What was a musical?
It was Oliver at the Children's
was
Theater.
Was it? Yes. Okay.
I just shot out for anything, and ever since then, I just started doing theater. That's how I got started, and now I love acting. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, because like I knew you had some pipes on you, and I was like, yo, she don't drop enough videos. You know, you usually do little videos when you sing in the house or something like that. I'm like, yo, we need more of that and stuff like that and everything. I always wanted to see you cover something, like cover...
I'm working on that right now.
Yeah, because I've definitely been a fan and everything.
Thank you.
And it was just, like, when you said you acted, I was like, well, damn, I guess that is a natural progression and everything like that. And stuff like that. But, let me see here. You, also, did some stuff at the Women's Drama League, and you did the National Anthem for the Delaware 87ers,
yep,
huh?
Yeah, I used to sing for them.
Oh, wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
But you know what I got to ask you?
What's that?
What the hell is up with Petty Pam? You had to let me know what's up with that.
Oh, my God. That is coming soon. I worked really hard on that. That's actually been an idea of mine for probably 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to work on it. And a lot of things are just being thrown at me. But I'm still pushing through. And it's coming together. I've thrown out the casting call. So I'm casting now, looking for new faces, all types of people to just be a part of it, and I'm ready to go. The script's already written. I'm just ready to go.
Because, you know,
awesome.
I like to go by Petty Pablo, but I'm like, her name is Pam, so it's like Petty Pam, and then the picture you have advertising, like you're looking through, I'm like, wow. I bet she is petty and shit, but I never been around.
Everyone does go petty, so.
I never been around you when we actually had a chance to go petty, but now I'm like, you know what, Ivy, we got to get Pam to come out to the Nomad and stuff like
Absolutely.
That. We got to see how petty she really is.
We love Pam. We go
hard. Because, like, me and Ivy will get mad at people for doing the same shit we're doing. Like, we might have a conversation while band's playing that we might not like all the tunes or something. But if it's a band we like, we want everybody to shut up. Everybody has to shut up. I mean, you shut up. I don't care. This whole table needs to shut up. And we're like, yo, but we do the same shit.
Wow.
So, yeah, so we all know about Petty and everything like that.
Yes.
And I know I came across a clip. It looks like you were in, I'm not sure if it was a music video or some sort of advertisement where you were in a restaurant.
Yes.
And everything like that.
It was a music video.
Okay. Yep. Where I think you were the girlfriend or
no.
something.
Well, I was one of the girlfriends. So it's kind of a few different stories tied into one.
Mm-hmm.
A Wood, he's a rapper. He's very dope. He lives in Delaware.
Okay,
that
gotta holler at him,
video.
Get him up on the show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. He's doing big things. He's a very nice guy. It was his music video. And basically, it's a whole bunch of different stories going on, and we just all happened to be in the same restaurant, but we didn't know each other. But we just happened to be in the same restaurant, and there was a whole bunch of conversations, people arguing, but that's kind of how we were communicating. Like, while they were arguing with us, like, that was, like, their lyrics, how they were, like, talking to us and stuff. And it's really cool. I love that music video. So
yeah, because you definitely went in, like, and you had the whole Petty Pam look and everything like that, too. And everything. But that was actually before I knew Petty Pam was coming
Petty
out. But
Pam,
I'm
okay.
like, damn, Petty Pam. I'm almost mad that I didn't come up with that. Like, damn, Petty Pam. But I'm definitely looking forward.
Thank you.
Now, say your name again because I know I'll mess it up. Shama. Yo, I'm I'm so
You're terrible.
I'll tear somebody's name up. I have to say, I need to say it seven times. Shama.
Yeah. I've heard that before, though.
Oh, damn. So that wasn't new.
Not even original. Weren't even original with it.
Now, I think you're the rookie on the team. You've only been an actress for 2 years.
Yes.
And that decision was made after you lost employment?
Yeah, I got laid off from my job, kind of unceremoniously. And I went through a period about, 7 to 8 months of soul searching. And I was in unemployment, and while I was there, I had to take a required class. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Obama. It was a required class that I had to take, and they recognized acting as a job in the Department of Labor. So that kind of planted the seeds, and then I was still poor, and I had to, I did manage to find a part-time job just as a waitress, but I needed more money, so I used to do modeling back when I was a teenager, and I thought maybe I'll just go back into that, and I met up with an agent, and she was like, you should probably add some acting to your resume. So that's how I got started. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
That is cool.
That is.
Yo, real quick, Prina said, hi, Ivy. I went to school. She said, Tuck, I went to school with Ivy.
She did. Wow. High school.
Small world.
Yeah, let me tell you.
And Prina also chimed in saying that every play, every production, every acting stage opportunity, Ivy was in that mix. While we were acting a fool, she was really taking it serious. She was all in. It was all awesome to watch her. She was fully committed to her craft. Her posture was even different. Well, I know about that posture because I spent some time with her in the bar, and we talk a lot, and she shared with me about, you know, how she was, she's the, like a dancer, and I was like,
Okay, can we not discuss everything?
I'm like, dancer? I was like, yeah, I want to know more about that. She was like, nah, fool, not that type of dancer. I'm like, okay. Yeah, but I see you worked on 7 live theater projects.
Yeah.
And you were nominated for an award. No.
Okay. Yes. I was nominated for Best Actress in a Play, Non-Professional, for Titanic Tragedy and Trial, for Reedy Point Players. So, yeah.
Wow. And you also have one independent feature film?
Muda, When Time Is All That Matters. It was shot in Philadelphia by a Liberian production company, and it got recently picked up for distribution in Africa. So.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah,
what's up.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
And that was by accident, too. I was supposed to be an extra, and then the woman that was supposed to play the lead character's sister was sick and didn't show up that day. And that was, the only other woman. So they were like, okay, you have to play the sister. And then for it to make sense, because he and I look completely different, they had to add a whole extra scene with, a whole family, and that's how it came to be.
So her loss, your gain. That's what's up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thank God for the flu.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just like that and everything. But, let me ask the question, then we'll start from Ivy, Pam, and
Shama.
I'll just
say my own name. Just
point
to me.
No. We're bigger than that. We're bigger than that. Because usually, like I said, my co-host, she's not feeling well and everything, but she is tuning in, and usually she'd be like, boy, how many times she got to say it before you get it right? Come on, now. If it was alcohol, you'd have been like, Shama.
True.
Yeah.
True.
If it was alcohol, I'd be just like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she's probably sitting in bed now talking about, oh, he's fucking her name up there and everything. But how long have you been interested in theater? Like, was this something that you got into in your teen years or just...
No, for me personally, no. It's something that came about when I worked on Fringe Wilmington. So I've had a career in television. I've had a career in film, and so I've always been a producer and director in both film and TV, and so I just wanted to, if those skills were transferable to the theater world. And if you know my children, William and Caleb Brock, they're both professional actors now, but when they were kids, they were pursuing also careers. Even as kids, they were pursuing acting careers, so I just wanted to see, as a mom, I'm supporting these kids, if the skill set that I had in these other two media, if they would transfer to theater. So for me, I literally asked someone hey, I'm looking to maybe transfer into theater. Maybe I want to direct. Do you have a directing job? And my first job was Lips Together, Teeth Apart 3 years ago, where I met my producing partner, Rebecca May Flowers, who is a Philadelphia artist and as a working artist. And she and I have done, I think, about 5 or 6 projects together now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And you, Pam, when did you get interested in theater?
Literally when I said that I wanted to sing, so that was maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, I want to say.
Okay.
So that's when I got into it.
But you've been singing since day one, huh?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I've been singing. I actually used to play instruments. I used to play the piano. I used to dance, all that. But theater itself, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago.
So then that's is between that and music, is that your main love? Or music is still your main love?
Music is always my main love.
Everything. But theater, yeah. Theater is something that you thoroughly enjoy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And everything. And how about you, dear?
Okay.
See, so, dear. Yeah. Out that one.
So I have like kind of a weird background. So both of my parents used to be actors. They had me kind of young, but they used to do theater themselves. So I kind of grew up around, they quit because they were young and poor and had a kid. So like they had to kind of.
Real job.
Real job. Yeah. So I never considered theater to be a real job because they weren't successful at it. But I've seen it throughout the years. But I just didn't take it seriously until, like, a couple years ago. So, yeah.
Cool. Now, being in theater, especially local theater, do you get a lot of people that when you tell them what you do, they kind of look at you like, ugh, like, this is Delaware, like...
No, actually, me personally, no, because Delaware actually is very active on the theater scene. I mean, for us to be such a small place, we only... You know, technically, Wilmington proper only has 72,000 people that live here. Mm-hmm. And yet we have 5 major arts organizations here. So we have, like, you know, we have the Grand, we have the Playhouse, we have Delaware Theater Company, we have City Theater Company, we have the Ballet for State Ballet. We have, I mean, so no, actually, it's not an unusual thing if you're from Delaware to be involved in the arts here. Because, again, to be such a small place, we have a lot of major arts organizations right here in town.
Mm. And you think most likely why people come off like that is because they're not familiar, because those places you name, mm-hmm. I know them now because I'm your friend.
Right.
Before then, I'm like, you know, if it wasn't all one strip, like if we didn't have a theater row or anything like that, I wouldn't know.
I do think there's a disconnect between arts organizations and communities. I think arts organizations want to reach out to communities that exist. Mm-hmm. They just don't know how, and they don't have the staff or the people in order to do that. So, but yeah, I don't get a look at all from anyone because, again, there's a lot of arts that are happening right here in our local community.
How about you, Pam?
I get that look.
You get that look?
Yes, I do. not so much from other artists, but like, well, it depends what type of, like, art they're into. Mm-hmm. So some people, they'll just be like, musicals, theater, like, what is that?
See, because like I said, like, where I was ignorant and was, like, comparing what you ladies do as far as stage plays, now right. I know that's 2 separate items, not even in the same book.
Right.
You know, stage play is kind of like that nipple gum that you get at the corner store, and then, you know, what you guys do is, like, that good gum that come in the little tube thing and everything, you kind of sit it in the cup holder in the car and everything, that's that good gum. When you be like, when people ask for it, you'd be like, no, you can't have that, that's a good gum. You can have that that Bubblicious or that hard candy that it's all powdery and everything and stuff like that. So you do get the side eyes and things of that sort.
Yeah,
and everything.
I do.
Have you ever had somebody give you like a hard time, but then they seen the work or heard,
like,
of you?
What do you mean?
Like, let's say, you know, somebody came over and was like, oh, man, there ain't nothing popping in Delaware. Then they see your name somewhere and be like, oh, shit, I did see your name. Told you I was working.
Yeah, you know? I used to get that a lot. Especially, like, when it comes to, like, work and stuff, where just different places I used to work at, mm-hmm. used to be a lot of, oh, like, you do theater, or I'm not coming to see that, all this other stuff. And then I remember one time I used to work in this one restaurant, and then it was, like, a whole bunch of Out and About magazines, and, like, mm-hmm. me and a whole bunch of other artists were, like, on the front of it advertising.
I have that one show. At
me
home.
Me too.
Yeah.
I have it hanging up.
I have it framed at home.
It was just funny. Like, they was like, oh, Pam. I'm like, I know.
Like, that's come, all you can
come
say.
Come support. Like,
I know. Next time, come out. That's
just
all.
Come support. That's all.
How about you?
Yes and no. I think it was just more, like you said, I'm going to use your word, disconnect. Like, mm-hmm. I said I was acting, and everybody's mm-hmm. just kind of like, cool. And then later, like,
that is what they do.
Yeah, like, not really, anti high, like, oh, like, you're doing that in Delaware, but not really pro. I just don't think it really clicked until I actually started doing things. And then you're like, oh, you're actually doing things. And then it was like,
like you said, right?
Yeah, like I told you,
But I think if you're not an artist, I think a lot of people think that the arts are not for them. Theater, you know, dance, the opera. And it's for all of us. It's not just for one demographic of a person. You know, you can be whoever you are and come see a show like Peter and the Starcatcher or Memphis or The Wiz or Wicked or Phantom of the Opera and enjoy it the same way that you would enjoy anything else. You just have to give it an opportunity.
Yeah, you do.
It's not just for a certain demographic of people. It's for all of us. And it's being made by all of us. But it's not being supported by all of us. And that's the important thing about the arts.
I always think that if somebody famous or Insta-fame or whatever, somebody spoke on it, then I think more of us would
us,
go to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we would
like,
go to
like,
it.
Like, I hate to say it, like, if somebody like a K. Michelle came out and was like, there, this, and this, you'll have everybody and your mom running to the theater.
Well, of course, look how Love Jones, Love Jones the musical, look how well that musical did. I mean, because it's like we are all familiar with it in our lives and with our culture, you know, and then when it went on tour, like everyone and their mother went out to go see Love Jones the musical. But then we would have a show like, I don't know, just something different that maybe we wouldn't be as inclined to support, even though plenty of us would be, you know, behind the scenes and on stage and, you know, working in that kind of theater. It's really hard sometimes to convince us to go and support things like Peter and the Starcatcher, where we had me backstage and other actors of color, or Memphis, or even The Color Purple. I mean, it's hard to convince people of color to go see it. And it's a great show. I know you just saw it recently. It's a phenomenal show.
Yeah,
it's really hard to convince us, though, to go support it. It just is.
Because that's how we do it. You know, we...
But that's unfortunate because...
It really is.
It's unfortunate because it's our story. It's a story that is being told by one of us, and it should be supported and out there, and we should be able to put the dollars behind a story that we are telling.
And you would definitely think so, but... You know, when it comes to us, we, like I said, unless somebody bigger than us that we like says something, everybody's quick reaction is like, nah, it's not for me. It's not for me.
But again, that still comes back to, you don't know it's for you because you've never done it. It's just like sushi. Like, you try food, like, oh, I don't like sushi. Have you ever tried it? You know how many black people like in Mikimoto's right now because, like, they finally tried sushi? I mean, it's just, it's the same sort of thing. You don't know until you've tried it. And you'll probably really love it because it's wonderful. Live theater is wonderful.
I was like that too before. I don't know what made me just jump into theater like that. I really don't.
We talked about that, you and I.
Yeah, but before then, I'd never went to plays. I never watched. I mean, when I went on school field trips, okay, this is cool, but I'm probably never going to try out for anything like this. Like, that's what I thought. And then once I got in it, I'm like, yo, I really love this. It's amazing, and people really should come out and, you know, really see what we're doing. And it's a lot of work, too.
And Pam is a phenomenal actor. She just did last year, you did Cabaret,
which
is not actually a black story. It's a story about Jews in Nazi Germany. But the director cast nothing but people of color to tell that story. And what was that like? Because I'm sure that you could completely relate to their story.
It was very interesting in... It was interesting. It was different because of, you know, everything that was going on. I don't want to get too much into politics, but that's kind of why he casted people of color, just to, you know, relate things that were going on with what happened last year versus the time with the Nazis as well. But it was interesting. You know, I had to learn how to speak German a little bit and everything. So, I mean, I thought it was a great message, and people should have, you know, came out and saw the show because we worked really hard on that too. So.
Yeah, you guys did a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that show.
I've never seen that show before until, like, I went... Well, I've still never seen it, but when I did it, I was like, yo, I really love this show. Yeah. I still listen to the music, and it's in, like, German. So...
Oh, wow. So you had to learn German just to actually play the part.
Yeah, a little bit.
What was your character's name?
Oh, Fräulein Kahn.
Yeah, Fräulein.
Wow, that's something else. I don't know if I could learn German to... for a part and everything like that.
You know? Would if you,
the whole play
you
was an
then again, then again, like you know what? Dialect. I would learn German if it was free beer involved.
Hell yeah, you would. You would say Bier. As opposed to beer.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm going to stop acting like you know me. I'm
I know.
This is about y'all, not about my
drinking. I actually got a couple of my friends to come out to see that show, and they really
did. Did they love it?
Yeah, they really did.
That's because they
weren't
job.
Expecting it to be what it was, you know? So... Especially when I was like, oh, Germany, blah, blah. They weren't expecting, like, how we were going to our costumes, how we were going to be dressed, all that. They weren't expecting all that.
But again, I think that goes back to the point of we're telling stories that a lot of us can relate to. You know, and I think it really touched me. I've seen Cabaret before, but it really touched me to see it done with a cast of nothing but people of color. Mm-hmm. And just, because the story that they're telling is universal. It has nothing to do with color. It's a universal story of being... you know, discriminated against mm-hmm. and, you know, annihilated. These are entire people that have been annihilated at some point in history. That's right. Something we can definitely relate to as people of color.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let me ask you, ladies, this. And like I said, we'll start with Ivy, Pam.
Or we can start with Shama.
Or we can start with Shama. Shama, what was your first audition or leadership role? Leadership would more be for Ivy, but what was your first audition?
My very first audition was for a student film in Temple. So it was like a story about people that worked in a carnival. This one girl came from Taiwan, so it centered around her, but I was supposed to be like a motherly type character. Mm-hmm. I didn't get that, and that was, but that was a student film.
Yo, I love her leeway. She was like, popping up in the back.
I didn't get that.
But my first theater audition is the one I did get, which was Trillis and Cressida, and I played Alexander. Which they changed to Alexandra, and that was a Shakespeare play.
Okay.
And we made the theme around Star Wars. So, like, it was during the Trojan War, we made the Greeks the Empire, and then the Trojans were kind of the rebellion Alderaan type character. So,
I love Star Wars.
Yeah, me too.
Huge fan.
You, Pam?
First
audition?
So, my actual first audition was with Gregory Morris. Do you know who that is? He lives in Delaware.
Yeah.
He did a show called Second Chances, and originally I did not get casted as it because I had too many conflicts, I think. But then, like, I think it was like 4 days before the show opened, and the person that was playing a role dropped out, and I just happened to meet Bernia Johnson, who was in it.
What
and
Bernia?
She, me too. I just saw her yesterday.
Me too.
She called me. She was like, do you still want that part? Because we need somebody. We open in 4 days. And I learned, like, the whole script in, like, 2 days. And
good job.
Yeah, that's just how it went. But that was my first audition that I actually had.
Yeah, I love her. She's awesome.
Me too.
Now, Ivy, what was your first leadership role?
I've had several. I've jumped from being, like, on the board and being, you know, in charge of marketing and things like that from theater to actually being on, like, a production crew. So my first time to being on, like, a board or leading, you know, PR and things like that was with the Wilmington Children's Chorus and also Delaware All State Theater. They happened at the same time for me because my kids were little. And so whatever my kids were involved in, I wanted to be, you know, there and be supportive of that and to support other children.
You were definitely
like
hands-on
that.
Mom.
I'm a hands-on mom.
Definitely hands-on mom.
And to support
that.
Things that, you know, that they were involved in and support other children. So it's not just about my kids. I always wanted to make sure that that was involved. So that was probably about 10 years ago when those organizations started. And then when I decided to make the jump for myself, because now my kids are adults, when I made the jump to myself to say, this is something I'm really, really interested in, and I really want to be supportive of that, my first show was, like I said, Lips Together, Teeth Apart, where I was the assistant director to a director who's a professional director who's now my producing partner.
Now, you know what? When you said that, I'm sitting here putting my lips together trying to keep my teeth apart. I was thinking, like,
it sounds sexy, but it's so not. It sounds sexy,
right? You
should
have seen
those. It sounds
sexy. I'm
going to
let her finish,
not.
But I'm like,
okay. Yeah.
Now, I have to ask this one because it's just demanding me. When you have that special someone, do you find that most of them don't really take what you do seriously? Or, like, have you ever been in a relationship or dated somebody that it didn't work out because they didn't believe in you when it came to the arts?
Well, it doesn't work out for other reasons, but they definitely sort of, like, I remember being told, like, oh, you artists or blah, 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 blah. Like, they brush us off for being too emotional or too whatever, you know. And we are emotional. We are whatever. Because that's, I think, what being an artist is about, is sort of bringing all of those emotions and stories and everything to the table. But that's not the reason why a relationship ended. There's other things that are there.
Oh, yeah, because we mess up.
Yeah.
You know, us men, we mess up. So.
But for me personally, not because I'm too much of an artist. That didn't, yeah. But definitely I've been told, like, oh, you artist people. Like, whatever. Like, you're brushing me off.
Someone said to me before, this is not the drama theater. I'm like, I'm just asking you a question.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Like, gosh, I told you I did theater,
and you talking about this is not the drama theater. Like, I should never
tell
you that.
Stop being a drama queen, yes.
I am staying single to work on my career. But I have had interactions with men where I tell them I'm an actress, and they get really weird. Like, they'll, like, I'll say, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm working as an actress. And they're like, oh, really? Tell me more. And I'm just like...
Like, not that kind of actress player.
Yeah, but I think there's a certain stigma to it with everything that's come out that they just think that you're... somebody that belongs on the casting couch and that you're willing to, like, sell your body for that part. So I think that's where that impression comes from.
Yeah,
so.
Your actresses, not bottle girls.
Exactly.
Yeah. And speaking of the whole Weinstein situation, something like that, have any of y'all ever had faced anything like that from somebody that might have had the upper hand and be like, hey, if you really want this, you... Well, I know Petty Pam probably don't, because Pam looked like she read the book to a mother, so I wasn't worrying about what she and stuff. But Ivy would have cut him. We would have read about that in the paper. And poor Shama would just been like, okay.
Yeah. Whatever. Like, yeah. No, like, for, I've had people try to do power moves on me, but not necessarily men. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I just think it, I don't think it was anything sexual. I think it was just... power corrupts. That's where I'm going with that. When they feel they have a little bit of power and then they try to swing that over you and then they don't realize that I am the person that I am. Like, I get that I'm new to theater, but I'm not new professionally.
Right.
So, like, I have a different tolerance, like, where I'm just like, no, we don't play those games. Mm-hmm. Like, I can walk away from this at any moment. And I've noticed that I get treated with a little bit more respect.
So when you hit them with that, I could walk away from any moment, it's basically taking their power away from them. Like, I can't hold that over you anymore.
Pretty
because
much.
You can just roll out and you'll be fine with it and stuff like that. Because
it's not a desperation. Like I said, I'm new to this industry. I came from human resources. I came from customer service. I have a pretty thick resume just professionally before coming into theater. So it's not that hard for me to just go back to a regular job.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's not... This is supposed to be fun.
Right.
But
and the other thing I think is it's the entertainment industry, and we still have to understand that it's an industry. It's a business.
Yeah.
It's not just like... We're not just artists that are out there. And there is, again, to use that word, there's a disconnect. Like, when you say to someone you're an artist, they think that somehow or the other that you're not business-minded.
Right. Right.
And I personally also have worked with plenty of artists that are also not business-minded. Like, it's still a business. Mm-hmm. You have to fundraise. You have to make, you know, raise awareness. Like, you can't cut... A lot of organizations do this. They cut their marketing and PR. We're still a business. If you can't get asses in seats, you're not going to be able to pay your actors.
Right.
And, you know, it's a business, and we still have to treat it. It's fun, and it's wonderful and lovely, and we're telling great stories. But in the end, at the end of the day, we still have to meet, like, our bottom line.
Right.
So we still have to take it seriously. And there are a lot of people both in and outside of our industry that don't do that, and they need to.
Yeah.
I agree.
Now, let me ask you, what was the response from your friends and or family when you announced you wanted to be a theater performer or just work in theater?
It was always expected, I think. It wasn't a surprise.
Yeah,
it's not a surprise.
How about you, Dan?
So for my friends, they were just like, oh, okay. Like, they didn't really take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Same for my mom and my dad. They just were like, okay. Because at the time, I actually, I was in school at the time, and I kind of, like, dropped out of school. Because I was like, this isn't for me. This is not what I want to do. I need to be in the theater. And I dropped out, and my parents were so mad. I was like, I want to be an entertainer. That's just what it is. I want to be an entertainer. And they were pissed. Like, they were so mad because they've never seen me perform. Mm-hmm. This is my first time like, they see me perform, but, like, not in a theater. And this is my first time really expressing it. It's like, where is this coming from? And now they're really supportive. They're very supportive.
Like, but again, people see it as first, a frivolous thing. Yeah, like, they don't see it as a real career, but it is.
Yeah, I know. But at first, my parents were just like, yeah, I got all the backlash. I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to end up. I was like, I'm not going back to that school. I made up my mind. I want to be an entertainer. So what I was in school for had nothing to do with entertainment.
What were you in school
for? I mean, I was in school for hair and makeup. So, but I didn't like it, you know. And what made me actually leave the school was I was talking to the principal one day, and I was just like, I don't know. We were just talking. He was like, where do football players go when they, you know, want to be football players? I was like, to the field. He was like, so that's what you need to do. And I was like, you know what? You're right. And I just stopped.
So did you tell your mom, hey, the principal pushed me out?
No. She not upset. That school's closed down right now. So, I mean. Mm-hmm.
And how about you?
Like I said, both my parents used to be actors. Mm-hmm. And I think it helped that I had the big girl job first. Mm-hmm. At that, I got unceremoniously laid
the
off.
Big girl
from,
job.
And then they were just like, okay, because that was supposed to be a secure job. So there was no job security. So they were just like, all right, go ahead. And then, like I said, with my friends, it was more like, cool. Like, they just didn't really gauge it. It's been more concerns about, like, how are you making money? Because I do have to, like, have some sort of a supplemental income while I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really had a whole lot of adversity as far as making a decision.
Well, speaking of adversity, as women of color, do you think you face a much greater adversity in theater than your non-black counterparts?
Can I speak on that?
Yeah.
I think it's systemic. I don't necessarily feel like it's personal, but I do mm-hmm. feel like there's a lot of parts right now that are written for people that are not of color. Mm-hmm. And especially if there is a historical play that's normally white history as opposed to people that incorporate all colors. But I wouldn't say it's like personally you can't be in it because mm-hmm. you're black.
Okay.
I just think it's more of a systemic issue.
I agree with that. And I think the stories that are being told are also being told from the white perspective, the white male perspective. Yeah. I mean, I think that we have, as artists of color, we need to get out there. I mean, like, we all want to be in Wicked, and you. Mm-hmm. There have been black artists in Wicked, but you might not be able to be in Wicked because it's not our story. I think mm-hmm. that there are stories that can be told and should be told from our perspective, and I think mm-hmm. more actors of color would be able to work if we also understood that, like, yeah, you can be on stage, and that's great, but then you can also work behind the scenes like someone like mm-hmm. me. You know, you can be a producer, you can be a director, you can be a writer, which is a triple threat in mm-hmm. the production side of theater. And tell the stories that are important to us.
Right.
So, I agree. It's not done on purpose.
It's not done
but,
on purpose.
You know, and I think that in many ways, not local theater, because I don't think local theater does this well, but I think in general, theater does do it well. That they do tell stories where they cast many actors of color. I don't think that works well locally, but I do think it works well in general.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I did have one production that was supposed to take place in Austria during World War II,
mm-hmm.
Where the best people for the part just happened to be people right. of color. But that role was written for somebody that was blonde hair and blue eyes. It wasn't written for somebody like me. But the director felt that he needed to have me in that part. So it does kind of happen, but not as much. But she's right. If it's a bigger theater, they mm-hmm. tend to be a little bit more flexible.
Okay.
Or even Broadway. I mean, yeah. Broadway has definitely been known to, like, let me use, again, a show like Wicked. They've, like, Fiero has been black. Elphaba has been black. I mean, those are not roles necessarily written for us, by us, but women of color and, you know, men of color have been able to fill those roles. So, again, I think we do it mainstream. I think they do a really good job at actually mm-hmm. doing that. I don't think the job is being done locally. Mm-hmm. I don't think that at all. I mean, I've mm-hmm. seen, like, a local production of, like, The Wiz, and, like, you can't have a black Dorothy. Like, you just can't tell the story of The Wiz with a white Dorothy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, a white Dorothy. But, like, yeah. I've seen it told that way, and it's just...
So The Wiz was told with a white Dorothy?
With a white Dorothy.
Okay.
And it's a great show, and it's not done that often locally, but when it is done, like...
You see my face?
Yeah. You see my face? But when it has been done.
I'm sorry. I'm like Team Diana. Like, I just know, like, the movie.
That.
I haven't seen it live. I know the movie.
It's
but
a great
I couldn't
show.
Imagine having a white woman play Dorothy in The Wiz.
And I believe in colorblind casting. I really do. Yeah. But only if colorblind casting were equal to all of us. And it's
right.
not.
Yeah. It's not, yeah.
If it were equal to all of us, then fine. But it's not equal to all of us.
A good reference for that, if you want to look it up later, is the issue with In the Heights in Australia.
Oh, yeah. Mm, yeah.
Yeah. So,
In the Heights.
In the Heights.
That's do you want to tell them about
that
one
show.
Of those?
So,
it's a great show.
It's a great show. It's written by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Who is also?
He also played Hamilton.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the show Hamilton. And it's...
That's the one that Trump was getting all mad at because
yeah.
he, you know, kind of...
Yeah.
Just the vice president or something like that. Or
the audience. It wasn't him. The audience
he felt
did that.
Yeah.
yeah.
No, okay. but I'm familiar with him. But it's basically about the Latinx experience in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they put the show on in Australia, and all the principal characters were Caucasian. So mm-hmm. There was no Latinx, which I get that that's a little bit harder to cast in Australia. But there are people of color in Australia that could mm-hmm. have done that role, and they weren't really considered. At all.
Oh, wow.
It was that type of show where they really probably should have read the content more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, damn,
you know.
We'd be importing, you know, Australian actors. I mean, like, damn, they running the screens here. You know, every time
exactly.
I turn around, they run the screens. So you mean to tell me you couldn't import somebody from, you know, Latin America or somewhere else? Like, you know.
Well, it's not even just that. I mean, mm-hmm. they have there's Aboriginal people. In Australia,
right.
there are people
of
color in Australia
that could have did
that could have done that role, that could have done those
yeah.
parts.
And again, it still boils down to talent. You have
yeah.
to still be talented.
Yeah.
So no one's saying you give the role to the black person, you know, because they're black.
Right.
You still have to be talented.
Right.
You know, you have to be able to carry the role. But you know, but you don't just cast a white actor because you want to do In the Heights. Like you have to make a concerted effort to look for and to cast and advertise to. You know, the actors of color that are talented, if you want to do In the Heights.
Right.
Right, and they didn't really do that. That was, like, the big issue. Wasn't it, the excuse was that they couldn't find anybody, and they come to find out there were plenty of actors available.
Of course
oh, wow.
That
yeah.
could have auditioned for the part. That was where the scandal really kind of gained ground, because it's like,
oh,
no,
wow.
there's...
But that happens
yeah.
with a lot of organizations where they don't meet people of color where they're at. They just want to put out on their Facebook or their Twitter or their Instagram page with their same followers or the same people that they know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that they're casting this show that should have a diverse cast, and then they wonder why they don't get it. They don't get it because they're not meeting us where we're at. I mean, I've,
right.
I've gone through that with, like, A Little Princess, which I did last Christmas. I just went through that where Peter and the Starcatcher. And because I didn't have control over how we reached out to our audience,
mm-hmm.
you know, we had to ask people personally. I think I've even reached out to you before to, like, Pam, mm-hmm. I need you to be in the show because we don't have enough actors of color. Because we weren't in charge, as a production team, we weren't in charge of how the organization reached out to
mm-hmm.
artists. So we've had to ask personal artists that we know to come in and, you know, be a part of our production, which required a diverse cast. But they don't meet artists where they don't meet artists of color, you know, where in their circles. They don't make a concerted effort to get out there.
Okay. Now I do have a question from somebody in the chat. They said, would you say we just need more people of color in the position to make those decisions? I guess it's referring back to what we've seen. Other.
Absolutely.
And I guess the thing is like we need to let our brothers and sisters know that you don't have to be in front of the camera. There's tons
of plenty
of
jobs.
Some of the heavy
yes.
hitters, you don't even know what they look like.
Right.
Absolutely. And that's in a lot of industries. That's in the film industry. That's in the TV
mm-hmm.
industry. That's in the, you know, the theater industry. Like, the heavy hitters are actually not the ones that you see, you know,
mm-hmm.
out front, like, being the face of something. And absolutely, we need way more people. Every board that I've sat on, I'm the only black face on it.
Mm-hmm.
Wilmington Children's Chorus, Delaware Allstate Theater, not Christina Cultural Arts Center, but...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we know that. We know they're black.
But Wilmington Drama League, I mean, the only person of color, that's ridiculous.
Mm.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think if we have more people behind the scenes, like, you know what? I noticed there's some great stories out there that's not being written because somebody's not getting the encouragement or that push to, like, go ahead and write your story, man. Or go ahead and write your story, sis.
Or it's not being bought. See, that's another thing too. The scripts are out there, but are they getting bought and put into production? That's another thing, because you have big issue with that. Proud Mary with Taraji P. Henson. They barely marketed that film until like the week before that it released.
Right.
And like the thing is that I mean, I heard the movie, the quality of the movie itself wasn't that great, but the fact of the matter is that they didn't believe in it. The production company didn't believe in it to begin with. So that's really a big hurdle that we have to
overcome. So how can somebody do a good job when you're not going to give them the tools and everything to do the good job? It's just like, we'll go mediocre with it and we won't talk or promote it or push it out and all like that. Because honestly, I didn't know it was a movie because I kept seeing the billboard with, the afro and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell is this? Somebody got a new album or something? Like, I didn't know about it till, I started seeing it more than one day. I think I was stuck in traffic, so I had a chance to actually look at it and was like, oh, shit, this is a movie. I'm thinking it was somebody's album or something like that. I thought it was SZA, her or somebody.
And we can't be the only people of color on these production teams and these board meetings, on these boards, that are pushing for this. Because, number one, I don't speak for all black people. I speak for me, and what I know and my experience. And number two, when you do speak out, and I think that we as women face this, you don't want to be perceived as the angry black woman, which is what people will perceive you as when you speak your truth. When you speak your truth, you're the angry black woman somehow or the other
Oh, wow.
And that's it's ridiculous, but it is the kind of hurdle, I think, that we face. I remember telling an organization that they're doing a show that is about an LGBT, he's about a gay choir guy, boy, and they're doing Choir Boy, and they're doing it in February, and I was told by the executive director, well, it's great marketing tool, and I had to tell her, we're not a fucking marketing tool. Right. We don't market to black people in the black month, and the only black show out of the 9 that you're doing this year, you don't do the goddamn black show in the black month.
Wow.
And she couldn't hear it.
Right.
She couldn't hear it. Like, all she could see was, it's a great marketing tool. Bitch, we're not a fucking marketing tool. You know what I mean? Like, you don't tell our stories in Black History Month just because it's the black story. Like, that's ridiculous.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's that passion I was telling you.
Sorry. That's that passion. But I thought that was a ridiculous statement. You do the show
because it is. February is the only time you really want to.
You're going to tell a black story? I think that's ridiculous. It's a great story to tell, and the director is great. You know the director. It's a great story to tell. The director's great. The cast is great. But, I pushed really hard for us to move it out of February because I didn't like the fact that the reason that you want to do it is that because you want to appeal to this, this particular audience. That's bullshit.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, I had a friend at my day job that, he's white. And he's like, bro, why does it seem like they only do one black person at a time? With comedy... He's like, because he just got turned on to, I think, Insecure, the show with Issa Rae, like that. He just found out about that. He's like, y'all fucking love this show.
It's a great show.
Why is it only one black person at a time? I'm like, I know it's got to be dozens of stories because for him, that's a whole window he's never seen. Like, he knows the dating aspect from him being a white man and him dating white women. But when he sees down the screen, he's like, yo, we pretty much go through the same shit, but just a little different. He was team, what's the guy's name?
Lawrence.
He was team Lawrence till, he got into the second season. He's like, man, fuck him. He's a fucking bum. He's emotional.
He's a fuck boy.
Yeah.
Like Tasha said, he's a fuck boy.
So he went all in. I'm like, and you're right, though, because, not getting off the topic, but, we got Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart's not the only funny black guy that's in America.
No,
really, but that's the one that everybody wants to push. Now, don't get me wrong. I enjoy him. I love looking at his movies and his comedy specials, but there's hundreds of other comedians I would love to see have a chance at a role because every role isn't, Kevin Hart.
Right.
That role could have been equally as funny or maybe opened up a different dynamic if it was somebody else.
Yeah.
And like...
But Tuck, we see that locally. I mean, you and I constantly discuss that. We see these people that have like the biggest mouths that are always somehow the other. They're also the least talented in many ways.
Right.
But like they're the chosen ones at this point in the game. Where the, you know, main society in Delaware or Wilmington has decided to put them on. I mean, we see that all the time. I think that's a microcosm.
Because you and I definitely go
we
at
talk
it a
about
lot.
That.
I'm
absolutely.
Like, I'm like, what the this motherfucker, he's just a good salesperson.
Right,
she,
he has a big mouth.
But he's garbage. But
he's garbage.
By the time you know, sold him garbage. On it, the person that spoke on it probably sees that it's garbage, but it's like, well, I'm in too deep now. I'm going to put this motherfucker out here, so I can't really say nothing. So they end up fucking up the market, so to speak.
So what happens, I think, locally is also happening, like you said, at a national level. Like, why are we only, like, why is it the, and you know what? And so, why are we only one at a time? And, and quite frankly, me personally, like, I said this to someone last night, like, I'm tired of playing your happy Negro. Like, I'm tired of that. I'm not here for that.
And I think that's why so many people, especially people of color, are so hype about Black Panther. Because if you really know the story behind Black Panther, he didn't come out to be a superhero. He came out for fucking revenge.
Yeah.
And once he got his revenge, he found an additional reason to stay and help and be a part of the Avengers. It wasn't like he was like, I came here for some beef and we just happened to run into this team and they're like, oh, this dude's something else. You know, we can't really stop him by himself. And then when they find out he has a whole city that's just equally as dope as him, it's like, wow. And I think that's why so many of us are hype about it, because we're not a drug dealer, you know, we're not a crackhead, we're not a pimp, we're not a hoe, nothing like that. We are actually out here doing some really good shit.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of people, like, really hype on it and stuff. Because I know I can't wait for it.
It looks amazing. That's just the comic book nerd in me. Like, I work comic book conventions for free. I'm just really excited to see this. Like, I saw Civil War, and honestly, he and Spider-Man, the kid that played Spider-Man, were, like, the best part of that film.
You're right about that. Definitely, definitely. Can't wait to that part two that come out. But getting back to theater and everything like us, like I said, you know, it's more than enough room for us to have more people than just one person.
Absolutely.
Like whoever's hot right now, you know, there's about another 30 at least we can bring along and stuff like that. And I think sometimes when people make it, they're so concerned with staying there, they kind of don't
forget about everyone else.
The life raft for everybody else until their stuff starts down declining. Like, oh yeah, I'm starting to lose favor, so let me bring somebody else to kind of push up. Because even think about in the 90s, like I'm dating myself, but in the 90s we had so many movies that were coming out. Like it might have been direct to video,
movies,
this and that, like
TV,
that movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Like we had a lot of stuff. Like we were really running TV,
right?
And people didn't get hip to it. Like, it was Fox that kind of kicked the door open. Then I think it was UPN that changed the WB or something like that.
Right,
like
in the 90s, we had, like, Moesha. We had, like, Living Single. We had Martin.
And I think we definitely need that back and stuff. Because, like, it's actually something. It was something I was watching about this doctor or something. I think it's called The Resident. And it's this typical story. White guy comes in. He's unorthodox. He's against the book, but he's good.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen that before. Me personally, I want to see how would an Indian woman handle that? Or how would a Black woman handle that? Or how would an Asian woman handle that role? Like, we didn't need another blonde hair, blue eyed white man for that role.
Mm-hmm.
That show, although it's okay, I think it could have been so much more if they put a woman of non white background into it. Because we would have the different dynamic. Like, he's white guy, so you know, it's like, okay, you know, well, they're not gonna come on hard to him as they would do an Asian woman's, like, oh, throw some ice on him and, you know, bring his temperature down real quick. They'd have walked her ass out the door, but the white guy door is like, we're gonna reprimand you, but you come back to work tomorrow, you know.
Right.
I think it would have been a better, like, I think a lot of stories that I see that fail because people are tired of seeing white people in these roles. I mean, not to be all pro-Black or anti-white, nothing like that. I just think if people opened up and said, you know what, maybe like that one TV show, Smilf, I guess it's about young mother and stuff like that. We don't need to see the young white woman because we had that with Weeds. We had that with a whole bunch of, we had that with Girls or whatever. We done had that. Let's see another woman. Like, that's why I like She Gotta Have It. You know what I mean? Because I thought
That was a good show.
That was good. I mean, I liked the original movie, and I think the show was good. But I think
show was good.
I think people really need to start opening up. Be like, yo, man, white people ain't the only one with the problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would love to see a true horror flick where it's non-white people. Because I think we just handle stuff a little different.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, you see me running, everybody else going to run.
Right.
Pam's not going to be like, what's y'all running for?
Absolutely.
Why are y'all running?
Absolutely not.
You know, it's totally different. But getting back, let's see here. Have anybody lost or gained friends? Well, of course you gained friends in the journey, but have you lost friends on this journey?
Absolutely. I mean, we know what I talked about. So, you know, the last organization that I just did a project for, somehow or the other, and I'm not saying it had anything to do with me being a woman of color, but like somehow or the other, there was a mistrust there or a disconnect or something. But basically, like we were trying to raise funds for our production. And
oh, we're talking about the car wash situation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I was accused of stealing funds to pay for my lighting designer. From the org, yeah, it was nasty. And then, of course, when everything went down, then everyone wants to come and kiss my ass and be like, oh, Ivy, that's not really happened. Well, what the hell, you know, what really happened?
Right.
So, absolutely. And I don't have time for that. I would never, if you know me and you know truly who I am, you know I would never steal from the arts. Not once. I work too hard for the productions that I work on. I've worked too hard for this organization to steal $500 from you. And that affects my real life.
Right.
I mean, that affects my real life. I would never put my reputation on the line like that. So absolutely, there are just people just recently, as of, you know, this year, November I'm talking about. So in the last couple of months that I've just cut off and I will never work for them, with them, anything again.
Wow, that's got to be rough, though, because that's messing with your character.
You don't mess with my character. I am, you know, no, I would never do that. I've worked personally, I've worked too hard for the arts and too hard for, you know, organizations and too hard for children to ever take from them,
right.
Ever.
And
we're not talking about $500,000. We're talking about $500.
And I remember,
why would I ever steal
that? I remember this conversation because you were like, well, damn, I paid for such and such out of my own pocket.
Oh, I paid $400 out of my own pocket for the lighting designer.
You know, nobody wanted to invest because it wasn't their idea.
Exactly. And again, you know, that's just making all of us look good. I mean, like, you know, one of the things that I'm very conscious of, it's like, I'm not saying I'm not difficult to deal with, because I know I can be difficult to deal with, but I'm not doing anything that's not going to make all of us look good. If the production looks good, then the organization looks good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because the people who are coming to see this play, this show, this musical theater, you know, production, they don't know that Ivy Brock paid $400 for the light. They don't know.
Yeah, we don't
that.
Put that on the program.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We're not advertising that. All they know is this is a phenomenal production, and every time I come, it's great. Right. So absolutely, I've lost friends. Like, people that that I've said that I will not work with you again, and I will not put up with you again, because I think that you're ridiculous.
Oh, wow. And how about you, Pam?
Definitely.
You definitely lost friends?
Yes. I think all the friends that I have now are just
new
artists.
Friends.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have maybe like two friends that are from like middle school maybe, but we don't talk like that. It's kind of like, oh, I see you when I see you type of thing, but I've definitely lost a lot of friends. It's just, it's a disconnect. Like, it's just like, we just don't really relate anymore. So.
How about you, Shelly?
I've been very fortunate to retain a lot of my original friends as well as gaining new ones. Mm-hmm. But I definitely did have a friend that was trying to sabotage.
Sabotage,
I won't go too deep into it, but I noticed a pattern of and I read an article about this is how I knew it was happening, that there are friends that will sabotage, like when you first get married and you have that one friend that will constantly drum up a crisis to divert your attention away from your new husband. But they said that also applies to women in careers. If they take on a new career, that happens too. So I was in that type of situation where every time I would have good news or like there's a new project or something new, they
come with something else.
They would come with something else.
Yeah, I think we all face that.
Terrible, because I'm really not the type of person. There's friends that I've lost over time, mostly because we lost touch. In my life, I think I maybe actually had to personally drop like three people because they just were too, they just got to be too much.
Yo, she good, because I didn't drop so many people.
I know. I will cut you.
Because it's like I'm one of those people, I'm so cool with everybody. And, like, I was even cool with her during the entire time that she was doing this. It just got to the point where I was just like, I can't. You know what I mean? Like, I am now burning out because of you. you know.
I feel like I'm at a point right now where I just can't, period. Like, so if someone just comes to me with, like, bad energy or just, like, throwing me off. Like, I literally had to send a message to a friend that I had for maybe, like, 6 or 7 years last night because I just felt bad energy. And I'm like, you know what? Love you, but I just can't.
Right. Wow. You know?
Yeah, I'm and that's just how
it
is.
And it sucks when you have to do that, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks, but at the same time, it's like, I feel relieved. Like, yeah. Now I can move on and I can get done what I have to do. And I don't have to, you know, worry about your response. That's, I don't know if that's
and the plus, petty. Plus, that's Petty Pam. I don't Petty Pam. Petty Pam cut you too short to shit. don't fuck with Petty Pam. She about that life.
Seriously, I always tell myself, like, when it comes to friends or, like, even jobs and stuff, I'm like, God does not want me unhappy, so let me make myself happy and just not deal with it, you know?
Amen.
That's just how I live.
Well, let me hit y'all with this one, man. How do you prep for an audition? Mm. And Ivy, for you, it's like, do you sit in on auditions?
Yeah.
And how do you judge on auditions? But I want to start with
Yeah, you start with them. Start with the we'll come back to you,
because Ivy would go in and she's like,
I'm not an actor.
Boy, this is what we do. We get a bottle of wine and we talk and we hash out everything.
Yeah, start with the actors because I'm not an actor.
So for me, if I'm fortunate enough to get the sides are like small pieces of script. If I'm fortunate enough to get those early, then I do try to read on those, try to get some context. If it's a show that's been run before, I'll do a little research on like how it's supposed to be run. But that's mainly what I do. If it's a cold read, I'll meditate. That's all you can do.
Meditate.
Because you don't know what you're reading until you get in there. So it's just, you, like, now it's all about making sure that your nerves are completely balanced before you go in.
Yo, Pam, your whole face was like, woosah.
Yeah. No, for real, because I know how that feels. Yeah. Like, I know how it feels. It's like, what am I even getting into? Like, who is this person? Like, what's the story? I know for me, if it's a show that has been ran before, I like to watch it, and then I'll probably do my research, because if it's like a musical, that's what it usually is. I'll do my research to see what songs are similar that I could sing, and I'll pick maybe like 2 songs. Like at this point, I kind of have, I have like a whole music book, so I have a whole bunch of different songs that I just know, so I'm just prepared to audition for, you know, certain roles.
So you have like a black book of music and something like that.
It's not a black book.
It's blue, actually. But
I'm sorry, I'm going to do that. Your book is black.
Yeah, I have like all my music in there, and then I'll just probably practice one of the songs. But for me personally, I like to do my research, but I like to, if I got the part, like I like to do the show in a way that I want to do it, so I don't want to watch too much or dig too much into how someone else did it. So I'll watch it once, and then I'll find music, and then I used to overthink it, and now I just don't. I'm more comfortable with who I am and just being myself, so I just don't overthink anymore, and it's helped me a lot, and it's a lot easier for me.
Okay.
So
I can definitely say, as someone who sits on this side of the audition table and not on the side that they're on, what we look for when we have people audition for us is definitely, you know, personality. I can say, like, if we ask for something in the description, please be prepared to bring it. If we ask you for it, we want it, it's not negotiable, be prepared. Mm-hmm. There's so many actors that we don't work with because they came to our audition, you know, unprepared. So, I mean, so if you come to an audition, please be prepared. But at the same time that we want you to be prepared, we want you to relax. We're not judging you as on this side of the audition table. We want to see your personality. We want to see who you are. We want to see how you work with the material. So, I mean,
I just want to see the best person for the role.
Absolutely. And we know that the actors are, you know, nervous, and we get that and we understand that. And we just want to see, like, what you're bringing to the role. And again, if you don't get the part, if an actor doesn't get the part, it doesn't mean that they weren't good. It just means that they weren't the director's vision for that particular role. So that's for us what we want to see. Also, don't talk shit about the production, and don't talk shit about don't talk shit.
You mean somebody that didn't get the part might talk shit about it, talk shit about it?
But they could be also talking shit in, like, the, you know, you never know. I mean, like, I've had auditions where we have spies sitting in the audition room where we hold the actors. Mm-hmm. We put out a spy in it because we want to see how they act when they're not in our audition room.
Oh, okay.
So don't talk shit about the production or the people or...
So they might be in the room talking about, man, I'm just going to do this bullshit.
Right.
You know, I'm going to get it out the way.
But you don't know.
It ain't going to be my thing, but, you know.
And that happens. And I've had a spy sitting there. They'll be like, wow. They will report back to me like, you don't want to hire this actor because this is the way they behave.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So... Tip, FYI. Yeah. But seriously, you know, just bring it, and not to say take it seriously, but you don't have to take it so seriously. Like, it's not all about your day. You should treat the audition like, I'm coming in, I'm doing my audition, and I keep going on about my day. Mm-hmm. It's one more thing. It's you know, it's part of your day. Right. It's not something special.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it is, but, like, it's not like... Oh, you know, it's not like the prom or...
It's work.
It's, you know, work, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely
you're
work.
Just clocking in those hours, basically. That's all that is.
Agreed.
Now, to piggyback on that, how do y'all prep for opening night?
Breathe, meditate. Normally, oh, in live theater, though, mm-hmm. we normally have a final dress the night before the show goes live.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we're in full costume, we run it all the way through... All the technical issues should be out of the way. We have a little prayer before, you know, that hopefully everything goes well. But that's typically how a theater production runs. And then the day of the production, I don't know about Pam. I have, like, some rituals. Like, I make sure, like, I don't drink caffeine because otherwise I'll get anxiety on stage, mm-hmm. things like that. So...
Mm.
Petty
Pam?
So open night for me, I make sure I drink tons of water the day before that day. I drink ginger tea, throat coat.
Mm-hmm.
So
you pretty much stay away from caffeine too?
Well, yeah, I just,
for the exception.
I pretty much only drink water and tea, okay. Period. Yeah. Like, that's, I really drink, like, water and ginger tea or throat coat, like, literally throughout my day. So,
Nah, I drink whiskey.
I mean, but if it helps you.
Yeah. I mean, if that would help me.
Yeah, right. I mean, if that's
your way. If that would help me, I'd do the same thing. But that's pretty much how I prepare. And then I just meditate and I talk to God. I'm like, God, please don't make my voice crack. Let me hit all my notes. I hope I don't trip on nobody's foot. Let me remember all my lines. Because it's live. Like, you can't say cut. Like, you got to keep going. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I've seen Ivy prepare and everything like that, and I know I keep my distance. I let her do a thing, and if she needs me, she knows where to find me. I don't get in the way, because Ivy is, like, total focus, and she moves quick.
Yeah.
From room to room. She moves
it's
very
a lot
quick.
To do.
And she'll holler at you in passing, be like, oh, some water or food over there, boy. Do you have your seat? Okay. Like, you are all over the map.
But for me, my most important thing is, and I think the actors that I work with, so when I work on a production, my most important job and my most important thought is to keep the actors happy, to keep them relaxed, to keep them happy, mm-hmm. to not stress them out so that they have a great performance. Mm-hmm. So when we get into tech, I always make it my job to make this sure that they're well hydrated, well fed, that they understand that we appreciate them, that they're not too tired. So that chaos that you're talking about, mm-hmm. that chaos that I'm doing, that you're seeing as someone who's coming to see the show, that chaos for me is I want to make sure that my actors are well taken care of.
So you're absorbing that chaos to keep them
yes.
from having
I don't want, yes, I don't want that chaos to affect my actors. I want them to be relaxed. I want them to be.
Okay, I can get
yeah.
that. Because everybody else has been kind of chill. I'm like, wow, Abby's all over. You know, from a person outside looking in, it's like, yo, why don't she chill? But you're doing 1,000 different things to keep the staff and the team.
The actors in particular. But to keep the actors, you know, relaxed. Because, again, once you get to opening night, it's out of your hands. As a director, as a producer, the show's out of your hands. It's in their hands and in the hands of the stage manager. So you want to make sure that they're happy. Everything that you can. If they need, I mean, I even do their damn laundry. I mean, I stick in their dressing rooms. Like, I stick, like, a laundry basket. And, like, you know, if we need to have their laundry done, and it has to be done every night, we're going to do their laundry. Because we want to do everything that we can to keep the actors relaxed
wow,
and happy.
Wow, that's what's up. I didn't know that.
Like I said, well, I will, but I'm but sure yeah. some people don't, but I will.
But yeah, let me ask you this. Let's say something goes wrong. How do you handle that? Is that something that you can handle on the fly, or you kind of like play it off or something?
For me personally, I love it when not that I want something to go wrong, mm-hmm. but the best thing about live theater is that it kicks ass. It's different every night. When something goes mm-hmm. wrong and you can work through that, it's an amazing thing. I mean, like, when
the
I saw
you... The audience never knows.
The audience never knows. And it's for me, as a at that point, I'm just sitting in the audience watching the show, which is one of the reasons why when I work on a production, mm-hmm. I watch every show. But it's amazing to me. I get such a thrill when I watch the actors kick ass. Mm-hmm. You know, like if they encounter a problem, someone drops a line, they forget a song, you know, a prop falls down, whatever, and see the actors sort of like take on that responsibility and they fix it. That's kick ass for me, and I'm like, that's amazing. I'm like, yes. So I love actually. When that sort of thing kind of happens.
So Pam, Shannon, y'all.
Basic live theater, you can. Mm-hmm. There's no do-over. Mm-hmm. So you are powering through. So yeah, we've had that. Mm-hmm. I've actually had the good fortune of a cast member. The light fell. Her light mm-hmm. fell, and she was mm-hmm. supposed to be in it, and she adjusted. Thankfully, she was sitting at a table, and she leaned in to mm-hmm. get into the light and just did her entire like. Like first,
so she changed
monologue.
Her whole perspective, so the audience was none the wiser.
Basically, she just made it happen. So like, yeah, it. But like she said, there's anything can happen mm-hmm. in live theater, and you just have to like roll the punches, basically.
And it's amazing. You get like this. At least I do. I get this like sort of like rush of adrenaline, of thrill.
Yeah. Yep, I get it too.
Yeah.
But y'all gotta ask you this: do y'all have you ever got like gifts at the end of? Performance,
of course,
like,
yeah.
Somebody sent you something or something like that. Yeah. You know, you actually got.
We all
usually
give each other gifts.
Yeah.
So y'all giving gifts to each other. Yeah. I'm talking about, you know, maybe somebody was so moved by your performance, they sent some roses back, or they sent some bottle of wine or whatever and stuff.
Huh? I said I never got that, but
I've gotten flowers before.
But yeah, maybe for my family. Yeah.
Okay, because like.
It might not come live like right then and there, but it'll come in terms of like a donation or you know, like if they saw the show on Friday night and they were so moved and touched, they'll bring back other people to see it.
Yeah.
Or they'll buy like dinner for the cast or whatever, something like that. It might not come right away, but if someone is really touched and moved by the show, it might come in a different way later.
Okay.
Right.
And real quick, got a couple people in the chat room. What's up, Wesley? I appreciate you getting the shirt, fam, you know. Hey, man, you know, help your boy out, man. You know, the link's on the website and everything. And Giovanna said hi to you.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, girl, hey.
She hit you with the hey, girl, hey. You know they cool.
Yeah.
But hey, girl, hey. And everything. That's what's up. Let me get to this question. Were you ever overlooked for a part or a position due to your race? Ivy?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I achieve everything I'm supposed to achieve, so I don't know. But, you know, I don't think it helps. I don't think it hurts
to be a
black
humble
woman.
That's some humble pie.
No. I'm saying I don't think it hurts to be a black woman, in my position, because I think people realize that they need to have, like, diverse voices. So I think when I say, oh, I really want to be on this board, or I really want to be blah, 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 I think people have always been quick to sort of jump on it. So for me, no. But I'm not trying to not be humble, but I'm saying no.
How about you, Pam?
Ask me the question one more time.
Were you ever overlooked for a part due to your race?
I feel like I definitely have been, and then it's...
But you just don't have concrete proof?
Yeah, and then it's just like, oh, ensemble. But not saying there's anything wrong with ensemble, but personally for me, I just want to grow. So I want to get, lead roles or, you know, some type of principal role. And if I'm just... not given that, and sometimes I feel like it may be because of my race or people not giving me the opportunity to really show them what I can bring to the table. It's just like ensemble. But at this point, I used to be like, okay, but then right now I'm just like, no, you know.
You're better than that.
Right, that's just how I feel. That's why I'm like doing, well, it's not why I'm doing Petty Pam, but that's why I'm like just doing like my own thing right now. Like I haven't really been auditioning for anything else because I want to do my own thing because I know what I'm worth and I know what I can like really bring to the table, so.
Mm-hmm. So for me, I have a very unique part in this because I don't just do theater. I like do film and like television. For me, I identify as a Black woman, but I don't appear that way. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, there's roles that are written for Black women that I can't even play. I just do not look like a traditional Black woman. So I oftentimes get thrown into roles of somebody that's Middle Eastern, which is part of my heritage. Mm-hmm. I recently was on the show Bull. I played a Native American.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
Yeah. But like, if I wanted to apply for a role that was specifically written for a Black woman, mm-hmm. More than likely, they're not going to consider me.
Just out of curiosity, what is your background?
So I am mixed with everything.
I mean, it's like we all are, but you definitely.
Yeah. So like, to summarize, West African, Middle Eastern, European. I thought I was Native American, but it turns out that's not the case. But various countries within that background. Mm-hmm. But it's normally the question I get is, what are you? That's my normal question, even though
you're a human being.
Yeah, but my mom's Black. I'm Black. That's the way I look, just like her. So like, that's the way that I go by it. Right. But production companies don't normally see it that way. Right. They don't see me as a Black woman. So,
Well, I see you as a Black woman.
Thank you. I see
Ivy as my drinking partner, and Pam as being petty, so it is what it is, you know. It is what it is and everything. So, ladies, wow, we really ran this one now. You know, I didn't think we were going to be this long.
I know, because, like...
We was getting such good stuff on everything, and I just love seeing the energy and talking and everything like that, so... I hope this won't be you guys' last time here, you know, because I know there's tons of stuff we didn't really touch on and everything, but I wasn't going to take up your whole Sunday night and everything like that. But I appreciate, you know, Pam getting all dialed up in the bathroom and everything. I appreciate you allowing me to destroy your name several times.
Thank you.
And I appreciate Ivy coming through, even though I omitted the wine, because Ivy's like,
oh, my God, I couldn't believe that. When I texted you, you were like, I don't have any wine. I was like, what the hell?
I know. I'm going to blame it on Prina because she wasn't here. She wasn't here nudging me like, you got to get this. You got to get this. Yeah. You got to get this. So, yeah. So, that's what that is. So, my last question for the day would be, what would be your advice to someone wanting to get into theater? What would be your advice to them? Yeah, we're going to start with you.
Okay, yeah, because I'm new.
Yeah.
Community theater is a big one. Mainly because, first of all, you're going to cut your teeth on community theater. It's mm-hmm. You have to pull a show together with little to no budget. You try to put on professional quality. So just because there's no budget doesn't mean that it's not professional. And you just meet a whole community of people. I feel like I'm at where I'm at right now because I started in community theater and people know people and they just refer you to other places or they say, hey, talk to this person. So okay. I would say community theater.
Cool.
My advice would honestly to just be yourself and have fun, enjoy yourself, create. That's my advice.
I would piggyback on what Pam says. Take it seriously. It's right. Still, I mean, even if it's community theater, you know, just because it is community theater, you don't have to treat it like less than somehow or the other, like less than professional theater. Mm-hmm. So be professional.
Because we know you'll have some spies in the room.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I will. So treat it professionally, treat it like a job. But at the same time, have fun. I mean, it's not, we're not curing cancer. It's supposed to be fun.
Right.
It's supposed to be fun for the audience. It's supposed to be fun for the people that work on it, the actors, the production team. So, and it's something that should bring us all joy. So treat it as such. It should be a joyful project that we're all working on. So,
well, lady, Shama. No. Pam, Princess Petty. Princess Petty Pam. And Ivy, I think that's the longest we ever talked.
That is not
being
the longest.
Sober.
Oh, sober.
Being sober.
Okay, sober, I'll go with it.
Because wasn't no bottle popping. Yeah, we
I know, what the hell? We're like not like, you know, fawning over like glasses of wine at the Nomad. What the hell?
You know?
I was just there last night at BT Dubs. Because we know Darnell's show let out, so, you know.
Yeah, but damn, I'm honored that you ladies came through, and I definitely want all of you guys to come back when my co-host is here so she can kind of elbow me and be like, move, boy, this is girl talk and stuff. Go get that wine. I'll handle it from here and stuff. Because that's what would have happened. She'd have been like, you go get the wine and everything like that. And I just want to thank everybody out there for tuning in. If you haven't already, definitely, you know, check us out on Facebook. I've been flashing their names and their social medias. You know, Ivy is Ivy's Golden. Pam is Pam.ATK. I don't know what ATK
is. It's my last name. My name is Pam Atkinson. It's Pam Atk.
Yeah. And then Shama would have the whole government name on there and everything like that. You know, she got the whole government. Let me run that back real quick because I was running my mouth. Shama Kassan?
Kassan.
Kassan. Oh, my God. I'm destroying names. Oh, my God. You know what? I'm going to start saying these names 7 times before we go live and everything. But, again, I appreciate everybody checking out Board and DE. This show will be up on the podcast probably by Tuesday or Wednesday. So, if you got, you know, iTunes, you can go to podcast, look us up at Board and DE on Google Play. Board and DE is on there. And also, we'll have it on the YouTube page, and it'll be for replay on the Facebook page and everything like that. So, once again, thank you for joining us here at Board and DE. And ladies, I hope y'all enjoy your night, and I will have wine one day soon. Thanks a lot, y'all.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
See y'all.